Hey everyone, welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're going to jump right in today.
Sounds good.
You know, I think we all get a little overwhelmed sometimes trying to keep up with all the new research and information out there.
Yeah, for sure.
And you've sent us some fascinating stuff. This is what we do here. You know, we
Yeah.
try to go through it and
Distill extract.
find those crucial insights without you having to wade through all the details,
But
right?
that's exactly it.
So today we're going to do a deep dive into something called contact hours.
Okay.
This is a metric that Dr. Richard Fien has proposed
Okay.
as a way to monitor child injuries and illnesses in child care centers.
Interesting.
Now, what's really interesting about this is that it isn't a totally new concept. It actually has roots going back to 1979.
Wow,
It
okay.
kind of resurfaced during the pandemic in 2020.
Interesting.
And now he's considering it for a whole new application.
I see.
So we're going to be looking at his work from 1979, from 2020 and 2021 to try to understand this contact hour metric and figure out if it could be a valuable tool for assessing risk in childcare settings.
Yeah, I mean, if it's been around that long and keeps popping up, there's probably something to it.
That's what we're hoping to find out.
Yeah, let's see if it has legs.
So this idea of contact hours, like I said, goes back a ways.
Back to 79, you said?
Yeah, all the way back to 1979. It first appeared as a way to track regulatory compliance.
Okay.
Back then, there were these federal interagency daycare requirements,
FIDCR.
FIDCR, right?
Yeah.
And they set standards for things like the staff-child ratio, right?
Right.
How many staff should be present for a certain number of children and what the maximum size of groups could be. So the contact hour metric was proposed as a way to determine if childcare centers were actually meeting those rules.
I see. So, like a monitoring system.
Yeah, and what's really fascinating is that they were considering whether this could be done without even having to do in-person visits.
Wow, really? So, like a remote audit almost?
Exactly, yeah. Like a remote audit, like you said.
That's pretty innovative for 1979.
Right. I mean, this is before the internet,
Yeah.
before,
Yeah. For...
widespread use of computers.
Absolutely.
So the poster that you shared from 79 really highlights this, right?
Right.
So if this seemed like such a useful approach back then, what happened?
Well, it seems like the contact hour metric, at least in its initial form, might have been a bit ahead of its time.
Okay.
From what Dr. Fien's written, the FIDCR was actually rescinded in 1980.
Oh, wow. So just a year later.
Yeah, just a year later. So the whole regulatory framework that the system was designed to support just disappeared.
It's never really got a chance to be implemented.
No, not on a large scale. But then fast forward about 40 years
To the
after the
pandas.
pandemic, exactly, suddenly this idea that had been shelved becomes super relevant again.
Yeah, because suddenly everybody's thinking about remote monitoring and how to
Exactly.
track things without being physically present.
Absolutely. You know, it was a time when in-person observations were just not feasible in many cases.
Yeah, so the contact hour metric kind of has this resurgence. And there was even a pilot test in Washington State
Oh, interesting.
to see if it could be used to estimate COVID-19 exposure rates.
And did it work?
Well, according to the research, it seemed to do pretty well as a mathematical model.
Okay, that's pretty impressive. So it went from being a compliance tool to a potential public health tool.
Right.
That's quite a journey for this metric.
Yeah, so the papers from 2020 and that 2021 paper by Fien and Stevens, they really delve into
Yeah, I do.
this idea that contact hours, because they take time into account,
Right.
could actually provide a much more nuanced view of exposure than just counting the number of people in a room at a single moment.
Yeah, it's about the intensity and duration of contact, right? Not just a snapshot in time.
Exactly,
Yeah.
exactly. Okay, so we've talked about where it came from, why it came back,
Right.
but let's break down how it actually works. What is a contact hour?
Okay, so at its heart, it's a mathematical model,
Okay.
and it's based on answering six key questions about a childcare facility.
Okay, and these questions are in that April 2020 proposal, right?
Yes, the contact hour pilot study design proposal. And the questions are,
Okay, what are they?
all right, so first, when does your first teaching staff arrive or when does the facility open?
Okay, makes sense.
Second, when does your last teaching staff leave or when does the facility close?
All right, so that gives you the total operating hours, the
Exactly.
hour.
Third, how many teaching or caregiving staff do you have?
Okay.
Fourth, what's the maximum number of children enrolled?
All right, so that gives you like the peak enrollment.
Yes,
Got it.
exactly. Fifth, when does your last child arrive?
Okay.
And sixth, when does your first child leave?
Okay, so those questions really start to give you a sense of the flow of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Like the rhythm of the center.
The ebb and flow.
Yeah, like when are there a lot of people there? When are there fewer people?
Right. So then how do you go from those answers to an actual contact hour number?
Right. So you take those answers and they're used to construct what Dr. Fien calls the area of a trapezoid.
Okay. A trapezoid, like a geometrical shape.
Yes, exactly. So imagine a graph.
Okay.
Where one axis represents the number of people, both adults and children, and the other axis represents time.
Okay. I'm visualizing that.
And then the arrival and departure times create a shape on that graph.
I see.
And it might be a trapezoid, but it could also be a rectangle or a square or even a triangle.
Depending on,
you know, whether everyone arrives and leaves at roughly the same time or if there's more of a staggered arrival and departure pattern.
Okay, so it takes into account not just the peak number of people, but also how long that peak lasts.
Exactly, exactly. Right. So then you use algorithms,
okay,
which are basically step-by-step instructions.
Like a recipe.
Yeah, like a recipe for how to take these numbers and turn them into something meaningful.
Okay.
And conversion tables. Those are kind of like quick lookup charts.
Okay.
And all of that together gives you the area or density of contact.
Okay.
And from that, you get your contact hours or CH score.
Okay, so I've seen a few different formulas like CH1, CH2, CH3, CH4. Are those used in different situations?
Yes, they are.
Hi.
So it depends on the relationship between the total hours the facility is open, which is TO in the formulas.
PO, okay.
And TH, which is the total number of hours that the facility is at full enrollment.
Okay.
So like if the period of full enrollment is shorter than the total operating hours, you might use a different formula than if those two are the same.
I see.
And the algorithms in that May 2021 paper explain exactly when to use which formula.
Okay, so that makes sense. Now let's shift gears a little bit and talk about what Dr. Fien is proposing now.
Okay.
It's not just about staff ratios or even tracking a specific virus like COVID.
Right.
Now he's saying, let's use this to monitor the risk of any child injuries or illnesses.
Okay, so broader application.
Yeah, much broader.
Yeah.
Because there's research showing that the size of a child care center, specifically the number of children, is connected to how many injuries are reported.
Well, that makes intuitive sense.
Right.
More kids, more chances for someone to get hurt.
Exactly. And then you think about the Washington study where they used it for COVID.
Right.
So now the question is, could this also be an indicator of the potential spread of other infectious diseases?
Makes you wonder, right? Like, if it works for one, could it work for others?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So how do they want to test this?
Well, they're proposing a large-scale study.
Okay.
To see if the contact hour metric can actually track changes in injury and illness data.
And a lot of states already collect that data, right?
Yeah. Many states and childcare facilities routinely collect data on injuries and illnesses.
So they would take that existing data and then combine it with?
With the answers to those six contact hour questions.
From a whole bunch of different centers.
Exactly. From a large sample of centers.
Okay. And then they would use the conversion tables.
Right. Which we talked about earlier.
To come up with the contact hour score.
Yeah.
And compare that to the actual rates of injuries and illnesses.
Exactly. See if there's a correlation.
Right. So can we talk a little bit more about these conversion tables?
Sure.
What are they and how do they help us understand the risk?
So you have the contact hour CH conversion table.
Okay.
And then there's this concept of relatively weighted contact hours.
Which is RWCH.
RWCH, right.
Okay.
So RWCH takes into account not just the contact hours, but also the adult-child ratio.
Right. So the number of staff compared to the number of children.
Exactly. So it gives you a more refined measure of the intensity of contact.
Okay.
And then there are different models within that framework, like the RS 1.0 model and the TT 0.5 model.
And what's the difference between those two?
So from what I understand from that May 2021 paper,
okay,
it depends on the relationship between the total hours open, TO, and the total hours at full enrollment, TH.
Right, we talked about that before.
Right, we did. And the algorithms in the paper explain exactly when to use which model.
Okay.
Like, for example, the TT model.
Uh-huh.
It might be more appropriate for centers that have shorter periods of peak enrollment during the day.
I see.
Because it's designed to be more sensitive to those shorter bursts of high density.
Okay.
And then the tables themselves actually give you RWCH values based on different adult-child ratios and the number of children.
Okay.
So, for example, in the May 2021 paper, they have tables based on an 8-hour operating day.
Okay.
For both TO and TH.
Okay.
And the April 2020 paper has tables based on a 10-hour assumption.
Got it.
And the idea is if a facility's calculated RWCH is higher than the values in those tables.
For their specific number of kids and staff.
Right. Then it could be a sign that they're over ratio, meaning they have more children per adult than recommended.
Or that they're exceeding group size limits.
Exactly.
So it's like a red flag.
Yes, a potential red flag.
That maybe they need to look into it further. Now, there's also figure one in the May 2021 paper.
Right.
That visually shows how all these factors contribute to the contact hour calculation.
It's helpful to see it laid out like that.
Yeah, it shows that you can get those different shapes, the trapezoids and rectangles we talked about.
Yeah, it really brings the concept to life visually.
Right. And then there are the potential density distributions diagrams. Those show different patterns of child arrival and departure throughout the day.
Yeah, like some centers might have a really concentrated period of full enrollment.
Uh-huh.
And then much lower numbers for the rest of the day.
And that would give you a different CH score.
Especially under the TT model.
Right.
Than a center that has a consistently high number of kids for a longer period.
Which might score higher under the RS model.
Right, exactly.
And these different patterns have implications for things like
regulatory compliance, like we talked about, but also potentially for disease transmission.
Right, because even if the peak number of kids is the same,
a longer operating day could mean more cumulative contact hours.
And therefore maybe a higher risk.
Potentially, yes.
Now, graphs 1 and 2 in that May 2021 paper, they also show some interesting things.
They do.
Graph 1 shows that as the adult-child ratio improves.
Meaning more staff per child?
Right. The contact hours go down.
Which, again, makes intuitive sense.
Yeah.
More adults to interact with and supervise the children.
And then graph 2 looks at a wider range of adult-child ratios as the number of children increases.
Okay.
And it shows that programs with lower ratios, meaning more staff per child.
Right.
Have much more stable contact hour lines as the number of children goes up.
Meaning that the contact hours don't increase as dramatically.
Right, exactly.
As they do for programs with higher ratios.
So having enough staff isn't just about quality care. It also seems to impact the contact hours.
And potentially the risk level.
Yeah, according to this metric. Now, all of this is theoretical.
Right.
But they did do that pilot study in Washington.
So we mentioned earlier.
Yes. And it's detailed in the May 2021 paper.
Okay.
So they used electronic attendance systems to collect data from the centers.
And they also did phone calls with the providers to get more information about staffing.
Right. So they wanted to see if this contact hour methodology could actually work in a real world setting.
And what did they find?
Well, they found that it was a pretty good screener.
Okay.
For identifying programs that might be exceeding staff-child ratios.
Interesting.
And they also found a link between higher contact hours and a greater likelihood of reported infections.
So it did seem to be tracking with actual risk.
Yeah, but it's important to note that they don't see this as a replacement for on-site visits.
Right.
They see it more as a way to help target those visits.
So like a triage system.
Exactly, yeah. Like if the contact hours are really high,
then that program might be prioritized for an on-site inspection.
Exactly. So it's about using data to make smarter decisions about where to focus resources.
Okay, that makes sense.
So what's next for this contact hour metric? What are they looking at for the future?
Well, they're talking about some pretty exciting things.
Like what?
Like a 3D version of the metric.
3D.
Yeah, incorporating things like program quality metrics.
Oh, wow.
Or even the square footage of the facility.
Okay.
So they have a revised formula, CH2, that includes square footage.
So a center could have a higher number of kids, maybe a slightly lower staff-child ratio.
But if they have a lot of space, that might mitigate some of the risk.
That makes sense.
They're also talking about using contact hours to understand the whole trilemma of accessibility, affordability, and quality in childcare.
A trilemma.
Yeah, it's this idea that you can't really have all three at the same time.
Right, you have to make trade-offs.
Exactly. So they're thinking about how contact hours could help us understand those trade-offs better.
Oh, right.
And even potentially to determine the actual cost of providing care.
Interesting. Any other potential applications?
Well, they're also talking about combining contact hour data with other sources of information.
Like what?
Like medical data on disease outbreaks.
Oh, interesting.
And geographical data to get an even more refined picture of risk.
Okay.
And they've even hypothesized about using color-coded risk levels.
I remember seeing something about that.
Yeah, like blue, green, yellow, red.
Based on the contact hour range.
Exactly. So it would be a more visual and easy to understand way of presenting the information.
So you could quickly see which centers might be at higher risk.
Exactly.
Wow. So this has been a truly deep dive into the contact hour metric.
It has. has.
It's amazing how an idea from 1979
right?
is being considered for all these new applications today.
It really speaks to the power of data.
Yeah, and the creativity of researchers like Dr. Feen.
Absolutely.
So as you're listening to all this, it makes you think,
what other ways could we use data to understand and support child well-being?
Yeah, beyond just injuries and illnesses.
Right, like what other metrics could we be looking at?
Exactly. And it also brings up that question of
the balance between data and human observation.
Yeah, because we don't want to rely on numbers alone.
Absolutely not.
We still need those in-person visits, those qualitative assessments.
To get a complete picture of what's happening in a childcare setting.
Right. And the work of Dr. Feen and his colleagues is just one piece of the puzzle.
But it's a fascinating piece.
It is.
It shows that we're still learning so much about childcare safety.
And how to monitor it effectively.
Exactly.
So thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
We'll see you next time.
See you then.